I say to myself, well, you know, as I'm getting older, I'm going to be leaving. What is it yet I have to do? What can I give? The motto is to live is to give, to share is to care, love is the deity of all life. There are no beginnings and there are no ends. There's just now, forever and ever and ever. Go share that with your brothers and sisters. And that was outside of Vegas in the Valley of Fire that I got this whole mystical reality pushed in my face. I didn't know anything about anything other than how to get a buck in my pocket.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. Today's guests are Makasha and Catherine Ruskin. Since their destined meeting in the early 70s, Catherine and Makasha have been committed to cultivating a soul-centric culture which honors the sacredness of all life. They have been instrumental in the founding of a number of progressive schools, facilitators of international youth leadership trainings, and co-creators of Global Link Ups for Peace. Catherine and Makasha continue to be committed to intergenerational collaboration, where young people experience their deep-rooted connection with nature and are empowered to express their unique gifts in the cultivation of a sacred way of life. They are also the co-founders of Hummingbird Community in New Mexico and the youth organization Earth Guardians. A big thank you to our premier sponsors, Bioptimizers, Paleo Valley, and Organifi. Their support is essential in producing this podcast, and we hope you will show your support by visiting them online and trying all the amazing products that they produce. Please check the show notes for links and details. Makasha, Catherine, and Paul are talking about life, a spiritual journey, in this episode.
Today, our topic is life as a spiritual journey with Makasha and Catherine Roski, two amazing people that I was introduced to by my friend Jonathan Goldman, the famous and amazing sound healer. If you haven't listened to my episode with Jonathan Goldman, please do. It'll blow your mind. I'm so excited to be able to share Catherine and Makasha with us today because they have a lot of life experience. I read in Catherine and Makasha's bio that they have 8 children, 25 grandchildren, and 25 great-grandchildren. So that's a full-sized Native American Indian tribe right there. So you guys, welcome. I'm really excited to be able to share you with all the guests. I've really enjoyed all our interactions with you guys, and I'm amazed at the life experience you bring to us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
We're excited, too, to dive in, see where we go.
Well, I love reading your bios, and the introductory in your bio stated, this is Makasha, "For 85 years, I've walked the medicine wheel expressing diverse archetypes. Through the journey of my life, I've been the fool, the father, mystic, entrepreneur, teacher, lover, healer, promoter, grandpa, wounded child, shaman, businessman, wild child, and Merlin." So to begin with, it would be lovely for you and Catherine to share an overview of your journey through life and share your dream, vision, mission, and values, and how you develop the values that you live by today. So feel free to just take it wherever you want to go with that big question. And I love all those archetypes, Makasha. They're amazing. I share some of them with you.
Yeah, I get that. It's quite a dance when you realize that you're traveling at the speed of peace, which is one of the...
I like that.
And there's the element of where do we stand in relationship to evolution from a larger perspective and what's happening on the ground in the development of what our soul calling leads us into. So it's been a journey of the fool, and we're doing a book right now on the journey of the fool. And these archetypes.
Oh, I'd love to read that.
Yeah, so we want to be able to share, you know, I'm 85 going on 380. In the mystic realms of consciousness, we really love to be in the flow of conscious evolution. We've done a lot of work with Barbara Marx Hubbard and others since back in the 60s. 60s was where I had my time of breakthrough, where sex was free and I was a horny dude, you know.
Gotta love that. Well, you know, I was born in the 60s. Maybe you're my secret father.
I don't know. I fathered a lot of seed.
I was born in 61. Magisha, I don't, you know tarot. I'm the fool in tarot. My based on my birth sign, I'm a 22, so I'm the emperor and the fool. So I know the fool archetype very, very well.
we dove into it, didn't we? Together, in a certain sense of conscious evolution of soul qualities, of coherent patterns that are a field now that we understand the field phenomena and how the field is really supporting the evolution of consciousness at a deep human form.
I think Makasha should share a little bit more about what led him to his transformation from being a high roller in Las Vegas to let go of everything. I think you should share a little bit about that, then I'll enter the scene.
Yeah, well, that's the fool. The fool was crazy enough to go through these mystical experiences that I had and started having. I didn't know what they were because I was just a street kid, a hustler, you know, in my life. You know, seventh grade education, so I didn't have much awareness of the intellectual realms or the material realms. And as this started to break down, I was producing my ex-wife's show, Marilyn Kay Show, and I started having these experiences that I eventually was called out to Red Rocks. This will be fun for just to share this little tidbit. I was sitting in one of the swank hotels in Vegas and sitting there and having a martini, and this guy comes up, full three-piece suit, you know, and no, opposite. I was in the three-piece suit. He had a bag over his head, and he said, "May I sit down?" And I thought, oh, here's the hustle coming, you know. And he started talking, and somehow he undressed me. not in literal sense, but he knew how he knew, I don't know. But he said, and when he left, he pulled out an envelope and handed it to me and said, "Go have a journey." And that's when I started getting into psychedelics.
Awesome.
So where am I at?
So then you went out to Death Valley.
Yeah, I went off to Death Valley and got the download of, I was told to take my children out of school, their shame institutions, turn off the television, and they enculture children's lives. So that prompted me to a whole, you know, release of this that world, and I had a mystical experience that I was shown that we're all one. We're just in the illusion of separation. And then we have soul family. Well, where was the soul family where I went to? It was totally crazy until I got the, you know, mission at, you know, at that time.
And you went to the Rainbow Festival, and then you created World Family.
Yeah. I got to where I had to take my children out of school, so I did. And I hitchhiked from Santa Cruz up to Montana, over the mountains into Colorado, where the first Rainbow Festival was happening. So that's where I found my tribe, and we started World Family, which motto was nobody had to join because everybody belongs.
Nice.
And then I had these talks with some other part of my psyche and guiding me.
So then just that kind of leads to where our paths joined.
Oh, cool. Let's hear that.
So when I was a senior at University of Colorado in Boulder, I was involved with helping to start a alternative elementary school, free school for elementary age kids based on the Summerhill Method, which was all about following the passion of the child, rather than imposing an outside educational format on them that oftentimes is very unengaging. Mm. And so it was all about, like, what's most alive and how do we nurture that?
That's beautiful.
And Makasha brought his two oldest. He had three children then and was with a pregnant woman. So he brought his two oldest daughters to the school. It was called Misty Mountain in Boulder. And that's where we first met, where our paths joined. And for the next couple years, as good friends, we put on international festivals the biggest one being in Boulder in 1974, called World Invocation Day Festival, where a lot of people came to Boulder, and there were spiritual leaders, and you know, everything was rocking and rolling in Boulder. Yeah. At that time. Naropa was starting, and it was really such a rich, creative time. And then people were linking up all around the world. So it was like the whole focus was, how do we really unite our family, our world family, and synchronize our prayers and our thoughts so that we can create a better world. So that was 1974. We did another version in 75 and 76. So at that point, we were good friends, but no intent for partnership, marriage, and children. And then I went off on a 3-month Vipassana retreat. And when I came back from that retreat, we ended up taking a trip together. During that time, it was revealed through just Spirit's guidance that we had a destiny together, that we were to bring in a family and be together. And that was 1975. So here we are.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you definitely have been on a journey together, and you did create a family together, and a big one.
Yeah. So it's been, and you know, we oftentimes joke when you say we had a arranged marriage, you know, that it was
divinely arranged.
By higher force.
It had to be, because I wasn't into any kind of, I'd already left the world, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, during that particular era, you know, it was like she got like a bullet or like a sign.
Bolt of lightning.
Bolt of lightning that we were to get married. And I said, I'm not interested. And yet at the same time, I found myself on my hands and knees asking her to marry me.
So that started our journey, and our first child together was born in 1977, and we have 4 children that I birthed, plus the 4 stepchildren. So yeah, that was the beginning of moving into conscious birthing and honoring all the rites of passage and threshold crossings that we go through life, you know, from conscious birthing to wakeful dying, now very much in the eldering exploration chapter.
Yeah, well, it's what an amazing journey you guys have had together. It's rare that people stay together that long anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, you know, we had to face the shadow of the diversity from a 7th grade dropout to who bought his high school diploma so he could get into a university. I was tripping through the waves of being embodied.
We definitely worked through bringing the diversity of our backgrounds together. And I think some of the themes you asked about, values and vision, and I think the following guidance and trusting what it is that we're inwardly being guided to, and being willing to take the leaps into the unknown, and oftentimes in ways that were considered like, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but you know, that takes what I call spiritual courage. And I think a lot of people today really haven't developed spiritual courage. They're so worried about doing what makes them feel safe, which is the territory of the ego, that they never really get still and listen to their soul guiding them, you know, the inner self.
Yeah, we really highlight that with our, like I do, I've stepped back from more of the world. I'm moving into my next cycle, which is moving into death and into through the Bardos into conscious dying.
I think you're going to have a great time, though.
I hope so.
Like exploring what does it mean actually to. I mean, I think at any stage of life, you know, preparing for death is important.
It is, yes. Yeah, we go to bed every night, and we could easily die in our sleep and never know what happened. So we have a mini death every night. And I think people forget every day is like a new life, really. And we can wake up with the realization that we can live better and love better and be more creative. And I think we're getting practice every night for the ultimate transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for, you know, in with our children, we also were co-founders of the Waldorf School in Boulder.
That's amazing.
And our kids went to there and went to school there. And we really got into Steiner and Steiner's methodologies of conscious evolution and, you know, more of the mystical side of things, you know. So he became a strong teacher for us.
Yeah, he's, as you know, I've studied Steiner for probably, I don't know, close to 30 years now. I've got 185 or more books by Steiner himself or Steiner initiates. So I'm well steeped in Steiner's teachings, and I think they're extremely important, probably today more than ever because of what's going on in the world. I'll give you a chance too throughout the podcast to bring in Steiner concepts wherever it feels right for each of you. Makasha, you, in your biography, you speak of healing ancestral wounds. And when we look at the world today, it's quite evident that humanity has a bad habit of repeating the negative aspects of history, such as wars, religious follies, destruction of habitats, chasing after wealth through material possession and gain at the expense of human relationships, love, community, and care for our environment. How much of the repetition of traumatic ways of living do each of you feel results from generational trauma and programming that is as yet unhealed? And what suggestions would you have that we can all use regarding generational healing? In other words, what I'm saying is, it seems to me, having studied these things, that we just keep recapitulating the same habits over and over again, like a broken record. But we, you know, Einstein was once asked, what do you think the Third World War will be fought with? And Einstein said, I don't know, but the Fourth World War will be fought with sticks and stones. So clearly he was saying that we can't have a Third World War or we'll go back to the Stone Ages because it'll destroy everything. And here we are sitting right on the tipping edge of a potentially nuclear disaster. Again, you know, bad habits. It's like we haven't learned the lessons of our ancestors, which is really what ancestral healing is all about. So I'm just curious how either of you feel about what the play of the history repeating itself is with regard to generational trauma and generational imprints. And do you feel there's things we can do to break that cycle before it's too late?
Yeah, well, I'll dive in here. This is actually an area that I'm more and more fascinated with, and people like Thomas Hubel and Gabor Mate, who are doing a lot of work with ancestral healing, both identifying how it's present with us in this moment, how we carry it forward, and then ways of healing it. And I think trauma work in our own individual lives, whether it be from childhood or, you know, things that come from other lifetimes that are still like activated, you know, through certain experiences. And I think for me, it's really important that we put attention to the healing of these traumas as they arise, even if we've all been traumatized to a certain degree. And as we carry that from prior generations, like seeing, you know, so much of the polarization that's current in our reality, and gosh, what's happening in the Middle East being such an example of that, of just like such old division that has never been healed, and practices of forgiveness and really being willing to try to understand each other's positions and perspectives is so, so key. Makasha did a beautiful ceremony with our kids. I think that would be great to share.
You know, I think the healing of the ancestral wounds are essential, you know. But I was, we were in Bali and we were at a temple and we were doing some, with some of our children, doing a ceremony there. And I got this whole pattern that came through because a field phenomena came in and I was showing that I needed to do some ancestral healing. So, and I was guided. I went and got robes for my 8 children, Bali robes. when I got back to Boulder, called them in, and we had a session where I was guided to kiss their feet
wash their feet,
tell them how much they've changed me, and put a robe over their necks. And it was just a profound, you know, experience to be the Father, and the Father humbling himself in front of his creation. Mm-hmm. So it was like an imprint was removed. And since we have to do, I mean, I feel we have to do that healing in order to have the place where we have a coherent pattern that resolves a lot of the past karma, you know, that we're dealing with. And so anyway, that's one. I've done it over the years. I've cut my hair to also release them, to give them a place where they can feel safe enough to be able to, you know, follow a path of love.
I think what was really key in that ceremony, and also in the prior one, when he cut his hair, he gave each child a braid.
And my mother.
Because he had hair about the length it is now. But it was all about asking for forgiveness for any actions and unconscious behaviors that he had done during his life, and it, with as a father. And it was so powerful, just the humility of doing that. And I think humbling ourselves, you know, and our acts, we all have acts that we maybe don't feel so good about. And if we can forgive ourselves and forgive one another, that's so core too, to the healing.
Hello to all of you. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you all for joining me and helping make the world a better place for all living beings each day. I suspect most of you are aware that people are having a harder time sleeping than ever, and you may be one of them. As you can imagine, there are many reasons for this, but the turmoil in the world is surely enough to keep most people's adrenaline and cortisol running high, obstructing one's ability to get deep, restful sleep when it is needed most. But you don't want to lose sleep when parenting demands are high, jobs require alertness for performance and injury prevention, and the ultimate safety and security is your own health. There is no method of regeneration and vitalization more powerful than sleep. One of the challenges with many of the sleep aids I've tested is that they often include melatonin or ingredients that stimulate melatonin production specifically. Any such product has left me feeling jet-lagged upon waking and feeling as though my natural hormone rhythms have been disrupted, and I know many others have reported that to me as well. As is so often the case, Organifi come to the rescue with an all-natural, non-melatonin-based sleep product. Organifi Sleep is a carefully crafted nighttime blend with a powerful blend of amino acids and organic herbs that promotes relaxation and facilitates a deeper, more restful sleep. A truly holistic solution for a rejuvenating and peaceful night's sleep. Organifi Sleep is easy to use. Just add it to water or any of your favorite nighttime beverages, stir, and drink for a beautiful, restful sleep. Wake up revitalized, energized, and ready to be your best in all that you do each day. To get your Organifi Sleep, go to organifi.com/check20. That's organifi.com/check20. To get your 20% off, use the promo code capital C, capital H, capital E, capital K, 20 for 20% off on checkout. Enjoy a deep, restful sleep with Organifi Sleep. Are there some things that anybody could do without having to hire a trauma therapist and go through an expensive process that you guys would recommend? I know, are you familiar with Mark Wu Lin's book, It Didn't Start With You?
No.
Oh, it's a beautiful, excellent book. You know, he's an expert on intergenerational healing, and the book's all about how we carry the wounds from past generations in our family, and research showing that it's very real. And there's actually research now showing that we're influenced by as many as 21 generations behind us.
And it's a lot of healing.
Yeah. And Mark Wu Lin, when he wrote his book, he was very sure from his work with thousands of patients that it was three generations were very reliably strong. But then research came out showing 14 generations. And now I've seen research that's going and suggesting that we're actually influenced by up to 21 generations. And that really lends itself to why the world keeps kind of going in this broken record type repeating behavior, you know, as we continue to get traumatized, if we're not healing past generational trauma, then we just re-imprint the next generation. So they have to not only take the last generations behind us, but they got to take what's being loaded on them. And as anyone can get the book, It Didn't Start With You, because there's a series of questionnaires and steps for how to heal. And then Mark Wu Lin has his own center where he has professionals to do generational healing and family trauma healing. But based on your guys' experience and, you know, being parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and having done your own ceremonies, what are some things that might be practical that almost anybody could do to begin that healing process, just like you did, Makasha, on your own?
I was just looking for the name of someone that I was recently referred to, also another good book, but I don't have it handy. But, you know, I think, Paul, like we've been talking about being able to forgive and move into humility, and it seems like, you know, I feel because of the intimate relationship we have with our kids and the capacity to really speak honestly with one another and share our hurts and our, you know, places. And if we move into any separation, to kind of move toward the healing of that separation, I think those are sort of the loving gestures that are just by the nature of them healing that trauma, you know, whether it's past or current or how far back 21 generations it goes. Just the power of really truly loving one another and not, you know, projecting and making wrong and all the things that create the separation and ultimately the wars. You know, some of the principles that we live by that have been core to our founding of our community here of Hummingbird and our work in the world has been things like taking self-responsibility and realizing that what arises for us in our lives when we find ourselves moving into reaction is usually just a hurt from the past. And, you know, how do we love that part home? How do we bring it into wholeness in our hearts? And how do we show up for one another and have a willingness to clear when there's disagreement and hold a bigger space of possibility for healing?
And from an evolutionary process, we're in a metamorphosis anyway. We're evolving to a higher mimetic pattern, which, you know, brings us more deeply into the field, a phenomena that allows for that emergence to be given and to be received, you know, in a way that really supports the young ones. And they're now my teachers. I've had two alcoholics in the family that came out of my previous life, and so we've healed those wounds.
I would just say in our larger family matrix, we've dealt with kind of all kinds of different aspects of the human condition and challenges. We're not exempt from any of them. And even though it's tough sometimes and tender and challenging, I think the more we can turn into it and be willing, like you spoke about courage, spiritual courage, I think that is to be able to turn into rather than away from, and, you know, really be willing to deal with what it is that is in happening in our relationships.
And, you know, and as Paul, as a father, you know, it's important for me to leave. I say to myself, well, you know, as I'm getting older, I'm going to be leaving. What is it yet I have to do? What can I give? The motto is to live is to give, to share is to care, love is the deity of all life. There are no beginnings and there are no ends. There's just now, forever and ever and ever. Go share that with your brothers and sisters. And that was outside of Vegas in the Valley of Fire that I got this whole mystical reality pushed in my face. I didn't know anything about anything other than how to get a buck in my pocket. So I'm playing out the archetype of Trump, say, for example, we could say that.
Yeah, we can do some ancestral healing there.
Yeah, and then to have compassion for that. So you're not polarizing and reinforcing the illusion from separation. You know, so there's a self-responsibility, because the tendency is to look outside rather than inside. And when with Steiner's doing Steiner's work, I had Arm and Lucifer and the Christ in the center, you know, and I had this was on a vision quest, and everything came out from outside, came inside. I was the murderer. I was the one being murdered. I was, you know, I was the saint and the sinner, all that. And so the work wasn't out here. It was in here. So I was saying that the work is internal. When that changes, it changes the frequency in the matrix. Mm-hmm. But you have to be aware of what it is you're doing, because there's karma involved in the associations that you, you know, we won't take money into our community if there's not a resonant field of trust, and because the karma, you money's tricky, so you know, so to be able to witness, I call it the loss and gain frequency. Whenever you come together, there's a, you know, a relationship that that is loss and gain. If you go there, you have to be a spiritual warrior to get out of it. You have to work your butt off to redeem that in a way that you're not making people wrong, but you're opening the heart of a field that is loving, you know, and that takes deep humility, and especially to cry in front of your children, or, you know, that I wish I could have done it differently, but I didn't, and the guilt that comes in that I've experienced through that. If I had been more wiser, my older children, the two that are recovering alcoholics now, but yeah, you know, it's a journey of love. That's why the mm-hmm. fool is so. People say, "How'd you do that?" That's like going to the precipice and jumping off of it and saying, "I don't know," and see what opens in the field. And so we've done that. We have not been out teaching. We teach around the world, but it's more in co-creation. It's more in a spiritual format of love and compassion and goodness for our brothers and sisters that are hurting so bad. Now, how do we see that collective in the collective psyche, you know, and how do we deal with that is through love, through compassion, you know, for all of our brothers and sisters that are suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think too, having studied Marshall Rosenberg's work and been through, because my mother is trained as a nonviolent communication instructor, and so is her husband. And I think one of the key things Marshall Rosenberg always encourages us to do is give ourselves empathy and compassion first, because we do have this pain. And I think it's scary to do your own healing because you have to enter into your own pain. So a lot of people avoid that. And I think that's where if you give yourself empathy and compassion, that you can hold yourself through the process. So you know that you're not doing it out of weakness, or, you know, the ego says, well, if you do that, you're admitting that you did that, and then you're the bad guy, and, you know, it wants to pawn it off. It's my mommy's fault, my daddy's fault, someone else made me do it. So I think if we take some time as needed, be it each day or before a ceremony or before going into our own personal trauma, and just hugging ourselves and saying, look, you've done the best you could. I'm wishing things were different, or I imagine you wish things were different. Yes, I do. But you're going to make it through this. You've made it through a lot so far. And it's, you know, at least you know you can come out the other side of your healing, because that's the direction of intention, which when you're traumatizing or being traumatized, you don't know if you can come through it. So the point being is, if we keep reminding ourselves we can come through the other side of our healing, because the intention is to be on the other side, just like doing a firewalk. As long as you keep your intention on being on the other side, you won't get burnt. But if you stand in the middle of the fire and say, oh my God, I'm going to get burned, you're going to get burned. A couple things I wanted to just throw on the table from my own use clinically and with myself of Mark Wu Lin's training, so people have something they can do at home. One of the things he suggests that people do in families is do an investigation of the family history of things like crime in the family, theft, things like theft, manipulation, stealing money or resources from other people, criminal activities, whether it be murder, rape, whatever. Look at which traumas happened in the family. Look at what diseases exist in the family and sort of map it all out. And then for each individual to look and say, well, you know, I have this tendency to shoplift. And now I can see grandma had that tendency to shoplift. She was arrested for shoplifting. And I may be actually living that whole storyline out for grandma. And great grandpa, he beat the hell out of my dad all the time. And then my dad beat the hell out of us. And now I got kids and I beat the hell out of them. So once you see the map that you map out, you can then go to the soul from your own heart, even when they're passed over to the other side. And you can say, okay, great grandpa, you know, or grandma, you had this real tendency to shoplift and I have this tendency to shoplift. And I need you to take responsibility for healing that in yourself. So from this moment forward, I release myself from your tendency to shoplift and I give you the responsibility to heal that in yourself, because you're not going to grow if I have to do that work for you. Now, I take responsibility for what I've done, but I need you to take responsibility for what you've done. So this is kind of your own ceremony. And so it brings this unconscious tendency into the consciousness, and you're making a spiritual contract with the other family members who have tendencies that you embody to take responsibility for their own stuff. And I've heard several stories from people that have done that about how it changed their life. And Mark Wulin told some mind-blowing stories on my podcast of things that happened when people did this kind of healing. The other thing that you touched on, Catherine, is the Native American family matrix, which I've been using for many, many years in my personal life and clinical practice. And for the listeners, it's not a hard thing to do. What I do is I do it for the whole Czech Institute staff, and I've done it for the family. But what you do is you can just take, I made them out of clay. I took clay and made each person a round emblem, and then I carved their name in with a stick or their initials, and then I put some kind of special pattern that came to me for them, be it a flower or a heart or a sunburst or something. And then you take a board and you make a big circle. So that might be the family that goes in the circle. You put yourself in the center if you're doing it. And then you start from the closest family member to you, which would be mom, because you came out of her womb. And you just empty yourself and move mom's symbol on the matrix until you feel centered and calm inside. Then you take dad's symbol and you start close to you and you just move it and kind of let your soul, your inner self guide you until you feel calm and centered inside. And you keep doing that for each family member. And what you'll find sometimes is all of a sudden the energy in you will get disturbed. So then you now have to reorient the pieces, because once you add, say, Uncle Bill in there, all of a sudden mom's energy gets distorted or dad's energy gets distorted. So you just keep working with the pieces until everybody in the family is inside the circle, but there's a sense of calmness, harmony, and being centered in yourself. And I've seen amazing things happen when I teach that to my patients, and other people that I've taught it to have said to me within days that all of a sudden heavy conflicts and battles between people just disappeared. They just, all of a sudden they were hugging and talking to each other, and like magic happened. And I think a lot of that has to do with the power of loving intention, you know, and, you know, working with symbols is very powerful. I won't go into all that because it'll be too much. But for me, you, Catherine, triggered me to bring that up, because it's not a hard thing to do. And if you just search the internet for books on Native American Indian family matrix, I've got books in my library. That's how I learned to do it. And you can really feel it when you do that work.
Well, I think what I hear you addressing, and you know, these are beautiful examples of different systems and family constellation work, and there's lots of different approaches to working. And I think from a just what it acknowledges for me is energetically how much we can do within ourselves or with the support of loving family or friends to move energy with those that have already passed over on the other side of the veil. We can work with them energetically and in the forgiveness, and like you were speaking, to help let go of the dysfunctional patterns that don't serve us, that we can work with people that we're in current feelings of conflict with on a, just working with them on a soul level and either forgiving them or going more deeply into like really feeling and understanding their perspective and their come from what
their wounds.
And so I think, you know, just acknowledge, I mean, these various systems usually take some level of support with someone that is familiar with them and can help guide you through. And it, you know, as you spoke, it's like it oftentimes can bring up a lot of activate the trauma or activate the emotions pretty strongly. So the book that I co-authored, The Co-Creator's Handbook, is an experiential guide with lots of practices in it that also point to how do we, in a resonant group of, you know, 7, 8, 9 people, to work together with various practices to help heal some of these energies, whether it would be in relationship to current conflict or old ancestral wounds. And so I feel like it's so important we recognize the need for community, for each other to work together and then also acknowledge what we can do on our own through our own inner work, as Makasha was speaking to, how much energy we can move and how important that is as we take self-responsibility.
Yeah, and it's essential for community to have those kind of, we have guidelines and that we can send to you in terms of values and the behavior patterns and
co-creator agreements.
Co-creator agreements.
I'd love that if you guys could share that with me. I'm very interested. I'd like to do some of this work that you're talking about with my own family, just because I think it's healing and it's important and it's great for the kids to learn how to be in a healthy family.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see the difference, you know, between us and our children, you know, from those that had deeper wounds coming through my lifestyle and my relationships back in the 60s, leading to a breakthrough, which I didn't know, but the mystic field, I was guided. There was like a voice that penetrated, not like a voice, but a voice that guided me. What do I do? And I was sitting at a pool, swimming pool, outdoor pool in outside of Vegas. And I was wondering, what am I going to do with these experiences, you know, that I'm having? And I'd go lay in the desert waiting for somebody to come pick me up and take me out of the madness. And I went and I sat down by this pool, and I looked out, and all of a sudden a veil dropped. And I saw disconnection of the energy field. I didn't know anything about energy field. I didn't find out till later. But the energy field, and then I got up, got a ball, went out in the pool, and got the kids and adults playing with the ball. Because I was looking for what to do, and the message came through, you're to gather the family home.
Hmm.
That's internal family, or it's a larger pattern. Working for that, you know, and but that was one of the dictates that's brought me to, you know, Colorado, and then, you know, co-founding. Yeah, you know the story. Where was I going with that now?
Well, just about bringing the family home together, and
family, and also the gathering of the fam, like our kids, mm-hmm. you know, that. Are now taking the shield because they have the values. The whole difference is just mind-blowing, having it in the family matrix with so many diverse groups, ethnic. Mm-hmm. You know, we got Aztec, we got African-American. Anyway.
What I would like to pick up on what Makash is saying, you know, when we look backwards as far as the ancestral wounds, and then when we also recognize our children and grandchildren and what's being passed forward, that actually has more of a healthy foundation. Several of our kids who have children a little bit later in life, watching the ways that they're raising their kids is just, it's so inspiring. And I'm learning all the time from them as they understand a whole nother level of parenting than, you know, we had. So watching the evolutionary journey going forward, as you were saying, to have your kids understand how to create functional family dynamics. And it's a very rewarding for us to see how our kids are parenting. And then how it circles back around to teaching us like better ways of just being in the world. So I love the full circle of it.
Yeah. These concepts we're talking about really lead into my next question and dialogue point for you guys, because really what we're talking about is fracturing and splintering of a family, but then pulling it back together as a coherent whole. So the question is, the increased use of the internet and social media, as well as the massive boom in the gaming industry, has led to a paradox. We can communicate with each other almost instantly from almost anywhere in the world today, but we are the most isolated, alone, and divided people we've ever been, with great social and psychological consequences. As experts in the creation of community and the importance of community, what positive steps toward creating healing relationships with ourselves, family, friends, and other social relationships can you suggest to counterbalance this fracturing through the use of advanced technology, which is really as dangerous as it is helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, part of our co-founding of the community of Hummingbird was really to be a place that we could bring young people out into nature.
We call them the sun-eyed children of the marvelous dawn.
Yeah.
out of the ethers comes to life, born in that. We could send that off to, because we have a whole passage. It's Sri Aurobindo's passage on the sun-eyed children of the marvelous dawn. Savitri, the book for the writer of the Mahabharata. So the evolution of consciousness, which was descent and ascent. So, you know, those are more terms in metaphysical or the our work with Steiner, with understanding, you know, conscious evolution and repatterning.
But I think the critical need for young people to reconnect with nature, or to connect with nature.
Very much so.
We've had lots of programs for youth empowerment here at Hummingbird through the years, and just watching what happens with the nervous system as they get off their devices and just, you know, engage in and do vision quests and do a lot of different forms of nature-based activity. We co-founded with our daughter Tamara our youth organization of Earth Guardians when we lived in Hawaii together back in the early 90s. And that was really also to empower the young people to be both spokespeople and to express their creativity, and to, like, our kids were writing rap songs and dancing and speaking at all these engagements when they were like teenagers and younger. One of our grandchildren, Chuteska, when he was 6 years old, he did his first public speaking in Boulder. And he told parents, he said, "You've got to get your kids." So this was about 15 years ago. He said, "You've got to get your kids off their devices and get them out into nature, develop their love for the mother, for the earth." And so to me, that's such a core counter to what it is that you're describing with, you know, as kids get lost with the social media and gaming and all that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to also mention, in the, we founded the Earth Guardians, and we had this experience, this event that we were taking documents to the United Nations. It was a group of young people that had come together, and this torch of hope that we had with this journey that we would cross all the states to the United Nations to, you know, to honor, you know, all life. And our kids were all part of that. And we were on the road for about 4 months. and went to Mexico on the same thing.
Well, what was powerful about that, and that I spoke a little bit about already, is just that when they were empowered and their voices were heard and they felt like they made a difference, it made such a huge, you know, like, impact on their lives that they've carried forward. And there's been kind of generations of Earth Guardians over the last 25 years that our Tamara has really stewarded. And I think, again, it's just like, how do we really raise the voices of the kids up where they are feeling active participants in the creation of their future? That's also so key.
And then we had one of our grandsons speak at the United Nations. He's very well known all over the world, the one that Mama was talking about in relationship to.
The one who at 6 years old,
yeah,
told parents to take their kids off their devices.
Now,
that's a good idea.
He's an influence, but that was from the values. The values are key, you know, to be able to have the values that we agree upon rather than, you know, fight over degrees, you know, agreement feel, you know. And there's another way of looking at also conflict in couples, you know. They blame and shame. And when you go blame and shame, you lose the energetic field of love. You're pointing out rather than taking responsibility. The only way you can recreate it is by taking responsibility, as you know. And you can transform into it, and transforms. If there's humility in the field, then you can, you know, garner the relationship.
Yeah. Heal the separation.
Heal the illusion of separation, because it's definitely an illusion. That's why we're so sick.
Most anyone listening to my podcast is likely to be aware of the many health benefits of extra virgin olive oil. There are countless research papers on its benefits, and it can be used in smoothies, baking, cooking, as well as a nutritional aid, and even on your skin for improved skin health. Unfortunately, a tiny fraction of the extra virgin olive oil used is made from authentic organic sources and can be toxic for your body due to residual pesticides. Additionally, the polyphenol content in olive oil degenerates over time or degrades. Sadly, most store-bought olive oils can be years old by the time they make it to the store shelf, meaning that there are not many polyphenols or life-giving nutrients left in the product. But Paleo Valley comes to the rescue again. Paleo Valley's new extra virgin olive oil comes from a certified organic valley in rural Greece, where the olives are grown using sustainable farming practices. No pesticides or chemicals are used during the cultivation process. This dedication to organic farming not only preserves the natural integrity of the olives, but also ensures that the final product is free from harmful residues. Discover Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil, a powerhouse of health benefits. Pressed just after harvest, it retains the health support of polyphenols at their peak. This ensures you get the full health advantages only fresh, cold-pressed olive oil can offer. This high-potency olive oil is fresh, pure, and loaded with beneficial nutrients. Packed with antioxidants and polyphenols, Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil naturally contains polyunsaturated fats, which contribute to healthy brain and heart function and support the body's natural response to inflammation. Not only is Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil a powerful superfood to add to your daily diet, it is packaged in dark glass bottles to maximize freshness and minimize nutrient loss. The dark glass provides protection against the deteriorating effects of light. If you want to support your whole body, including your brain, heart, and skin, and make the best tasting, highly nutritious foods for you and your family, there's no better place to go for super clean, nutrient-rich extra virgin olive oil than Paleo Valley. To get your organic extra virgin olive oil now, go to paleovalley.com/CHEK15. That's Paleo valley.com/CHEK15. No promo code is required. Just use the URL to get 15% off your order. My family and I love Paleo Valley's excellent products and use them every day, and I'm more than confident that you will love them too. An interesting issue is, I have worked with a lot of people that have had eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, vegetarianism for the wrong reasons, veganism for the wrong reasons, which leads to a health crisis, in many cases, cancer. And I did a lot of research to see what is the research showing as what is causing these types of pathologies in people, eating disorders. And I found a meta study that looked at a large number of studies on eating disorders, and they found something quite shocking, and it's imprinted itself in my mind. They found that the number one most common denominator of in families with eating disorders was parents that had no sense of direction in their life. So why I think this is important is because I think it's very important for parents to really get clear on what their dream is as an individual and what their dream is as a couple and what their dream is as a family. In other words, what's my dream? What am I creating out of myself? What am I metamorphosizing? What's my butterfly look like that I'm building every day? What does my butterfly look like that I'm half of with my spouse? And then what is it that the butterfly of the family is transforming into, so that everybody has a sense of what we're creating together, so that the compass has a North Star on it? Because when mom and dad don't know where they're going, the kids feel insecure. It's kind of like if you're a child in the back seat of a car and mom and dad start fighting and no one's paying attention to the traffic. The child is scared to death because it senses that there may be a crash any second. And of course, they're correct. And so when you see that something is as simple but profound as mom and dad not having a sense of direction in life has such a traumatic impact on the children, it leads to often severe eating disorders, then I think parents can really realize how important it is for them to get clear within themselves, because you're 50% of a spousal relationship. So you can't expect to be clear in your spousal relationship if you're clouded in yourself. And then bring the family into the fold. So we each take responsibility for our individual dream, but we look at how those harmonize together so we can create something together. And I think that's something that's terribly missing in the world today.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's powerful what the study showed. In relationship to that, it reminds me of something I heard when our kids were young and at Waldorf School, and there was a Waldorf teacher speaking about what factors they'd found were making that had the kids that were really achieving and happy and sort of more well-rounded and solid in life, what did they have in common? And it was that they sat down at dinner with their families every night, which is part of that whole kind of idea that there is a sense of family and groundedness and connectedness and moving in a direction together and having a really rich point of connectivity. And I feel so grateful that you know, that we've been both guided by vision, living this feeling of a destiny together.
Soul-centered life.
Yeah, soul-centered life. We've often speak about being encoded with the new world that wants to emerge, you know, and so our kids have all been infused with that and doing their own version of that, their own expression of that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And one of the things that we've made a policy in our house with the kids is that nobody's allowed to be using phones or tablets or computers at meals, so breakfast, lunch, or dinner, whenever we're together, because, you know, kids get excited about games and it's easy for us to think we have to check text messages or somebody's trying to reach me. And you get sort of habituated into this instantaneous reaction. And it's like the phone just takes you over, the computer, the game, the kids, they get so enthralled, they don't want to put it down. And so we've had, you know, many situations, even, you know, we only let the kids have media on the weekend after their Waldorf school week is over. It's kind of a tough call for me because I don't want them to be so inept with technology that they don't fit in, because I've seen what that leads to is whenever they go with their friends, they get addicted to it and they can't let go of it because it's something that the other kids have that they don't have. So it becomes even more interesting. Sort of a similar philosophy is if you tell your kids, no, you can never touch alcohol, then they're just curious as hell and they can't wait to try it. And then they overdo it. So what we do with our kids, if we're drinking some wine at dinner and they want some, we give them a little bit so it takes the edge off. It's not such such a taboo. The thing that I was making important was not being on devices during meals.
Yeah, but that dance between the two, you know, they can't have this here. We were macrobiotic for 10 years, and then we realized we were psychotic.
Yeah.
We were vegetarian for 10 years. We were, you know, macrobiotic psychotics. We brought Evelyn and Mukuji, you know, to Boulder and, you know, with John Denver and all that era. Yeah. But it's just that consciousness, you know, of awareness that you can get stuck, you know, in thinking you're right. And then you got to prove it. So you got to have another polarity, you know, to work through if you want a connection.
I think we both totally relate to what you just shared. You know, when our kids were growing up, we didn't have the devices. We didn't have to deal with what you're having to deal with now as a parent, which, you know, we see our own kids, how they're working that with their little ones. But we didn't have television for like 30 years. And so basically our kids pretty much grew up without a television in the house. And then when they went over to their friend's house, they were just glued to it on a similar kind of thing. And, or, you know, when we'd go to potlucks, they'd be like running for the sugar and the cheese, you know, or whatever it was that they have at home. And so learning it, like you say, how do you find that sweet spot of moderation so you're not creating that, like such a strong yearning for it, is such an important quality, but also setting the tone. Like we still, as we gather as family, you know, have candles and say grace and every night for dinner. And that's what we did during the whole time the kids growing up, everybody sharing their gratitude for the day or giving thanks in some way. And I think setting those beautiful and simple rituals in place.
Yes. And I want to talk to you about that later on. I have a question about exactly that. But we do the same thing. We start all our meals with prayers of thank you and thank you, Great Spirit. Thank you, Mother Earth. Thank you for the spirits of the food. And, you know, it's very important because the kids, their tendency is just to jump in unconsciously and start eating. But I want them to learn that, you know, this life gave its life for you. You know, you're bringing a life into you. So we need to be conscious that our life is given to us by other life. And if you think this stuff just magically appears, you're forgetting that that's not how it works. You have to nurture life. That's, you know, and the kids are always working in the garden and they love gardening. You know, they're totally into gardening and they love eating fresh berries and fruits off the trees. And they're like little, you know, Adams and Eves out there wandering around in the garden, just digging it, you know. So, but at the same time, I think it's important for kids to learn about the cycle of life and to have reverence, but they won't do that if the parents don't do that. I think that's the key thing, you know, and I think that's a real big issue today is kids think that, you know, money just jumps out of a hole in the wall because you got a credit card. They don't know how much work it takes to generate income. And they think food is just something that shows up in the store magically. And this is a much more of a problem for kids in the city than it is kids in the country like we are, which is why I don't want my kids in the city. And of course, we have them in a Waldorf school. So they get steeped in Steiner's teachings and the structure and learning myths and art and acting and not getting too involved in mathematical, logical processes and reading too much for their brain development. It's just sad because there's so much great information available that people just haven't got a clue about because they're so distracted by all the garbage on television and social media. And the problem is this stuff is engineered to trigger dopamine release and make you addicted. And so they're also embedding information fields to get people to buy and to trigger emotions. I mean, people have no idea that the technology that they're using, and they think they're just playing a video game, but they don't realize their whole mind is being taken over by this stuff. And it's extremely dangerous. We're dealing with a weapon, really.
Really, yeah, absolutely. I'd like to share a brief story about that in that regard. We did several with the Pachamama Alliance, several programs for young people, like 18 to 25 or so, to train, create a training that they then were taking the Awakening the Dreamer program of the Pachamama Alliance into high schools and colleges. And we had a training here, and one of the young people, one of the trainers, had relatives in Iraq. And this was 10 years ago or so. Anyway, it was one of the young people that was here, 19 years old, was very immersed in video games and particularly war games, where those particular war games were like killing of Iraqians and the way that they would like celebrate. They were, I mean, just really sick the way that it's structured, but beautiful young man, but immersed in, gotten it pulled into that particular field. And as the facilitator, our friend was sharing about his relatives in Iraq, the young young man realized all of a sudden it became like a real person rather than just a figure in the video game. And he had a deep sobbing and asking for forgiveness and just realized how he had been entrapped into this whole psychology of the video game that wasn't at all, you know, what he had intended, but he just gotten completely sucked in. And then when he was confronted in the presence of, wow, this is like a real person, and these are like relatives of this person who I have a lot of respect for, it was quite a breakthrough moment for him. But I think that's it's such a threat to the well-being of our young people.
Yes. It is. It's very scary. It's something that parents need a lot more awareness of. And I'll bring that up in another context a little bit later in the interview, because I've done some research into this and some of the research is pretty shocking, I must say. My next question is, my grandmother and grandfather were school teachers. In fact, my grandmother for they were both school teachers for 35 years, and my grandmother was the highest ranking person in the Redondo school district, Redondo Beach School District in Los Angeles area. I forgot what her title was, but she was the boss of the whole district. Both spoke with sadness that the standards for graduating from high school had progressively lowered in the time that they were in the Los Angeles school district, to prevent overcrowding. My grandfather said that when he retired, high school graduates were getting an eighth grade education compared to the same education that they were graduating with at 12th grade when he began. So the same, when kids were leaving school with a 12th grade education, it was actually an eighth grade education that the kids were getting when he started school. So essentially they lost 4 years of curriculum because of all the problems with overcrowding and various other things. And they'd had to bring in a police force because of all the gunfighting and knives and gangs. And they had problems with kids failing, mostly young men failing high school, oftentimes 3-4 times in a row. So there was 18, 19-year-old kids getting a lot of the girls pregnant. And you know, they were both very sad because they watched the whole dismantling of the school system due to all these problems. So that's led to a tremendous degradation, which is not getting better. My son, I remember something very sad. When my son was in 9th or 10th grade in La Jolla University City High School, I was a consultant for the Chicago Bulls for quite some time, and they gave me a beautiful leather jacket, a Chicago Bulls jacket. And I gave it to him as a gift, and he was really excited. You know, he was a big Bulls fan when he was a kid. He was a basketball player. And he came home from school and he was carrying his jacket. And then I noticed he stopped wearing it. And I said, how come you're not wearing your jacket anymore? He said, Dad, a gang came up to me and said, those are our colors. If we ever see you wearing that jacket again, we're going to kill you. And they were for real. And he said, these guys could carry guns and knives and they'll kill me. He says, I can't wear that jacket to school. Yeah. And I'm like, what in the hell is going on? You know, it just shocked me. And he was so scared he had to go talk to the school policeman to let him know that he had had his life threatened because he was wearing that jacket. So he was too afraid to wear it ever again. Leading on with my question, you both have a background in Steiner's Waldorf education and other systems and education in general, and our parents and grandparents to many children. Can you share your thoughts in regard to the degradation of education and any suggestions for parents regarding how they can support their children in gaining an effective education in today's environment? Because I think when you consider that a lot of school teachers are burned out, I've talked to many school teachers that have tried to improve the curriculum, but they get shut down by the school board and they won't let them make changes. I've seen recent research, a lady named Zen Honeycutt, who started Moms Across America, went into schools all over the United States and then had the food sent to labs and tested, and they found extremely high levels of, I think she found 19 different pesticides, many at far, far higher than safe levels. They found that the food was extremely nutritionally deficient. She exposed that almost all public schools have contracted out their lunch programs to fast food organizations like Jack in the Box and McDonald's and other corporations. So not only are they getting malnourished, and she also said that a lot of schools have cut out their lunch programs, and a lot of them have gone to vegan lunches. And she did research and found that for many kids who come from impoverished families, it was the only chance they got to get any meat. Now they're being forced into these vegan diets. And research shows that vegan diets for children is very dangerous because it stunts their growth and development, stunts their brain development, and leads to all sorts of problems in the future. Autumn Smith, the founder of Paleo Valley, is right now producing a docu-series on exactly that. And some of the research she's unearthed on these exact issues is shocking. And so when you look at this, and you guys have your background, the question is, with this reality we're facing, what tips can you give parents to help in some way enhance the education their children's getting, or what suggestions maybe do you have for things they can do with the kids, or concepts for maybe homeschooling? Anything that you could put on the table, I think, is important.
Yeah. Well, everything that you've shared, you know, is just, it's the systemic of what's happening in our culture, that, you know, there's so much that's falling apart. And it, for me and for us, I would say it's really, it's part of like what is the collective. We say, you know, we're being called to hospice that which is dying, while we're also midwifing that which is being born. And there's a lot that's dying, a lot that's falling apart in all systems, whether it's the medical system, we could go off on that in the same way as the education system, and of course the government and the lack of trust. And I mean, so as things are breaking down, I think it's like to recognize that this is part of
the evolution.
You use the metaphor of the butterfly and the metamorphic process, and that more and more people are familiar with these days, of the caterpillar becoming the butterfly and how it goes into the collective soup and everything breaks down, and then there's a beautiful new butterfly that emerges, and we are in that process. And so in this transitional phase, I mean, you and your family and our family are blessed to be engaged in Waldorf education and have other opportunities living more rurally and all the benefits of that. I think, you know, we've touched upon a lot of different points. I think, as you say, the more the parents can be grounded in their own vision of what they want to create, and then provide clarity and direction for their kids, provide good food. Doesn't have to be expensive food, but good, wholesome food that's free of additives and everything that you stand for, Paul, and of course your book's about. But it's hard if one is, has a number of jobs and has to rely upon fast food to feed the family, or doesn't have the education about the great, you know, how important diet is and nutrition for the development of the brain and the child. Fortunately, there's some things arising in systems in schools where kids are planting gardens. We have friends that stewarded a whole initiative around that in LA and Chicago and different places that where the kids were growing their own food and learning how to cook. And so those kind of opportunities either coming into the school itself or into family and community are so important. But yeah, it's a challenging time with all that we're having to like
navigate.
How quickly everything's breaking down, and that which wants to emerge has to be uplifted as much as it can.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for learning and growing with me and joining me on my podcast. A quick question for you. Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't, and that's pretty much true worldwide. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 600 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate that you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening, and this could be exactly what you need. So here we go on some of the common symptoms that indicate you might be magnesium deficient. Are you irritable or anxious? If you're not sure, ask your partner. Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you constipated? Do you have a hard time falling asleep or getting a restful sleep? Do you feel more stressed than others that seem to be in the same or similar situations? Do you feel moody and wish your emotions were more stable? Do you feel you lack mental alertness? Do you feel you're at risk for osteoporosis and desire to build stronger bones? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body simply can't absorb. That's why I personally recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are the best of the options available, or I wouldn't be offering them to you. I don't offer anything on my podcast that my family and I don't use ourselves. Bioptimizers is so committed to offering you the best quality products that really work that if you are not satisfied, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. In fact, they are so confident they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. To get your magnesium breakthrough and your 10% Living 4D discount, go to bioptimizers.com/living4D. That's bioptimizers.com/living4D. Use the promo code PAUL10 to get your discount. And by the way, in addition to the discount you get by using the promo code PAUL10, you can get gifts with your purchase, up to 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited-time offer, so go to bioptimizers.com/living4D and use the promo code PAUL10 for your 10% discount. Enjoy. So, Catherine and Makasha, is there anything that you want to add to complete our previous question? I have a few thoughts, but I'd like to hear yours just to sort of round that out and bring it to closure.
What I would add, and we've touched upon a lot of these points already, is just that we're in a time of such tremendous breakdown, I think we have to hold the context that it's also a lot of breakthroughs and the emergence of new possibilities and those that are inspired, and that's their creative calling to bring forth these options, just to be courageously stepping forward and manifesting, you know, whether it's bringing a good lunch program into the schools, you know, or gardens in schools, or creating programs where kids get out into nature, or parents becoming more solid in what they can offer to create the rituals that will help the kids feel more of a sense of safety and groundedness. So I mean, there's so much that can be done, but it's going to take individuals that are inspired and then follow through with those inspirations.
And I think also, Paul, is that community is essential during these times, mm-hmm. you know, and to be able to find your right relation with each other is key. And there's so much good news happening. It's like what you're doing here, what we've been doing. And mm-hmm. I look at it and say that, well, yeah, there's the breakdown, and I understand it from a, you know, a memoric process. We have to break down to re-pattern ourselves in relationship to how evolution is going. And so I think that's coming out. More people are more aware. And, of course, that's will create new ways of educating and taking, like we did, step out of the dominant culture, you know, and go create a new world, you know. And what happens? You can't go back. I tell them, you can't go back. You know, we are full on in it, and we're not waiting for it. We're preparing. We're doing what we can do, and finding coherence where we don't get into fight and flight. You know, and share, like the message I was given is to share is to care, to live is to give, you know, and to be able to be nice. And the Dalai Lama says, my religion is to be kind. So this is a time to really be kind to yourself, to each other, and love each other. Build community, build heart-centered relationships that really uplift and inspire and quicken the psychic field for more love to permeate each other. Find community. That's I just suggest everybody that can do that and have the opportunity to do that. You know, any way we can be of service, and because it's all one thing. You know, we're not divided. You know, we're a whole cosmology in itself.
Yes. You know, a couple things that come to my mind that I think are important to share. One, I have a podcast with a very amazing young man named Nate Ortiz, who's one of my students. And he tells the story of his life living in New York. His father was a drug dealer. His mother was strung out on drugs. And he was lucky if he ever got a chance to eat. He had to really barely survive for food. And he talks about his whole journey and how he transformed and became a Czech professional. And now he's writing an amazing book to help others as well. So it's a great story of possibility. And then having studied a lot of Jean Houston's work, she talks about the stages of the larva becoming the caterpillar, then the pupa becoming the butterfly. And she talks about how in the pupa, how the caterpillar breaks down and it turns literally into mush. Like there's just not even a structure in there. But she says there's imaginal cells that come out of that process. And I think we're in that stage right now where the caterpillar is dissolving in its transition to becoming the butterfly. But we also have to see this as an opportunity to reach inside of ourselves and know that we all have imaginal cells within us. And if we can dream up a more ideal world and just start with small things. For example, if the house is a mess, clean it up, because your external environment is part of your soul. So if the first step you can make is to clean your house and get the energy to flow in your house, it'll help organize you on the inside. And then for parents, like I've worked with thousands of patients, as you can imagine, and I've even had professional athletes making $1 million a year tell me they can't afford organic food when I tell them they need to switch to organic food. And I say to them, what do you mean? How can you not afford organic food? You just drove in my driveway in a $250,000 twin turbocharged Porsche Carrera. And then they explain to me, well, to be honest with you, I've got four houses, I've got, you know, this sports car, that's, you know, so I'm maxed out. I don't have any more money to spend. And so I sell, look, you can't eat that sports car, so sell it and start eating real food. So people actually kind of spin themselves into a corner. And what I would like to say to those listening in this regard is like, I have worked with countless patients that tell me that they can't afford organic food, or they can't afford some of these basic things. So what I do is I say, I want you to start writing down everything you're spending your money on and bring it to me, and I'm going to look and see what we can do. And one of the most common things I found is that people were spending somewhere between $35 and $50 a week just on coffee at Starbucks. That's one of the most common things that came up. So I said, look, you're spending like almost $5.50 a cup for a caramelized latte, when if you just went and bought some organic coffee, made it at home, or even for that amount of money, you could buy a coffee maker and take it to work, and you would be saving a lot of money. And so what I try to encourage people to do is say, look, where am I spending money out of habit on things that I could do more cost effectively and with higher quality products, and just take a few minutes and do it myself? And then instead of buying packaged candy and, you know, the amazing stuff that people eat blows my mind, and I say, look, you know, that 2-3 bars of Snickers you just ate could have bought you 5 or 6 organic oranges for the same price, or peaches, or, you know, so just look at where you can find sweet stuff that's natural, get higher quality products that are natural, and make your own coffee. Instead of buying donuts, buy some organic flour and make a few donuts in an hour in the house and get the kids involved. Like, our kids are always baking stuff. The nannies, the chef, that we're always teaching the kids how to bake, how to cook, how to make smoothies, how to peel fruit, how to process things, so that they're actually getting involved in the process and they learn. So it's not like they're always dependent upon somebody else to figure out how to feed them. If they're hungry, they know what to go do. You know, they go outside and grab something off the tree, or go in the kitchen and grab something that's healthy, because we don't give them garbage options. Point being is, just small steps in the right direction makes a big difference. Having a vegetable wash, if you just take a couple tablespoons of apple cider and put it in a 1/2 gallon of water and you wash your fruit with that, that's a lot cheaper than most soap costs, and it's not toxic, and it cleans the fruit. You know, my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, has all sorts of this stuff in it. But the key point I'm trying to make is that if you actually sit down, look at where you're spending your money, looking what you're actually getting for it, and what you could buy that's healthy, and ways you could do things that are healthier for you, instead of depending on poison, toxic, junk, fast food. If you focus on getting enough sleep at night instead of watching junk television and video games, your brain will turn on and your creativity will come alive. So paradoxically, having worked with all these people, it's a lot of small things that add up to a crisis. And if you just say, which of these small things am I willing to change, you can make a difference. And I developed a formula to help people do this. I call it the 1-4-100 formula. If the best I can do is improve on one of my four doctors, Dr. Happiness, Dr. Diet, Dr. Quiet, or Dr. Movement, just 1% a day for 100 days, I will be 100% improved with that aspect of my life. And I think it's realistic that anybody can make a 1% improvement. It's a subjective step in the right direction. But if you just give yourself a little success and you realize, hey, today, instead of drinking Starbucks coffee, I made my own, you feel that sense of accomplishment and reward. And little rewards and little accomplishments and little sense of satisfaction that you actually did something starts developing more agency. So people realize, hey, it's not that hard, I can do it. And I think people really need to have this mindset of small steps in the right direction, but have a dream for yourself and your family so you know what direction you're stepping in and why you're doing it. And I think little things like that can make a big difference.
Yeah, that's great.
We learned in the macrobiotic cooking years ago that if someone had cancer, and then somebody was hired to cook for the cancer patient, and they end up going back, if the family matrix doesn't change, is what I'm saying, you know, the habitual, I just do it myself, things I know that I shouldn't be doing. You know, so it has to be a shift to, you know, a deeper understanding of the family matrix that's involved, you know, needs their support. And how do you do that? Because you're changing eating patterns, you know. It's so difficult, but I mean, that's what we found.
I think just to add on that is that it, yeah, I really love what you're saying about like the simple steps and just seeing how you can just make those small changes in different areas. But it takes that, both the intentionality that you want to make the good shift. And then as Makasha is saying, like for the family unit to be aligned with that, whether it's just a marriage partner or with the kids or whatever, that everybody's kind of on board wanting to make that change. So he's saying like if somebody's gone to a clinic and gone through some great dietary changes and then they come back into the family matrix or their partnership where the old patterns are still in place, then it becomes very hard. So the whole system has to shift.
Yes, exactly. You know, we've talked a fair bit now about the real challenges in the world. I think most anyone listening to that is very hip to all this. But for me, I've always found challenges actually present opportunities. You know, every time I've been injured as an athlete, most of the time the doctors didn't know what the hell was going on. And I found myself, because I was so competitive and I love to win and I love to compete, you know, many doctors told me, you shouldn't box. That's bad for your brain. You shouldn't race motorcycles. You got a concussion. You don't race motorcycles again. Don't ride in the rodeo. I mean, I hear doctors telling me not to be Paul Check all the time. So what I did is I just let my body guide me. You know, if I found that laying in a certain position felt better, I did it. If I went to the gym and I was in too much pain to do a certain exercise, I found something that I could do. And, you know, if all I could do is lay on the floor and pull on a cable and breathe, that's what I did. And when my body healed a little bit, I did the next thing. And I found that my body actually guided me back to health again. And ultimately, that philosophy of working with the challenge. But the point is that I learned so much in my youth doing that, that one day I found myself as a therapist and I had this innate sense of what was possible because all these injuries taught me that you don't have to give up. You just have to go in and listen and let your body guide you. And the wisdom of the body teaches you what to do, which is you really have to make a commitment to being connected to yourself. Point being, every challenge is an opportunity. So what I'd love to hear from you guys is looking at the world situation we're in, you could literally call it a world crisis and not be wrong. What do you see the opportunity is emerging for us if you look at this thing and say, what is wanting to be born right now?
Boy, that's a large question.
Well, you're a genius.
Thanks, Paul, but you know,
you're
sitting next to one.
One of our mentors and dear colleagues and friends, Barbara Marks Hubbard, used to say crisis precedes
transformation.
And it's the evolutionary driver. Crisis is the evolutionary driver. And so that's what we're in. We're in, like you say, a world crisis, and it's the evolutionary driver for change. And sometimes, you know, one might get a health diagnosis and it, you know, it becomes a catalyst for a whole change of lifestyle. Or like you were sharing in your own personal journey, how your injuries have guided you to more understanding of your body and its needs. And so that's our, I think, optimism about where we're at, is that sometimes we have to go into a lot of pain to realize we want to change, to have that be enough of a like impetus for making different choices.
And agreement feels, like you're saying, Paul, agreement feels are so essential to have that alignment with your spouses and how you function in a coherent way of serving the larger whole and being resilient enough to be a model, like what I'm hearing you're saying, to be a model and to make those choices and giving people ideas about how to do that is so essential to to helping people. I see the synchronicities and everything that's happening is informing us and to be prepared, be resilient. You know who your neighbor is, like in the Hopi prophecies, you know, find out who your neighbor, your partners are, and stay close, love each other, build community. So it's happening slowly. And yeah, so I really appreciate it. I didn't know you were on the planet. I really appreciate it.
Sometimes I'm not.
I mean, we could have some great esoteric conversation about Aram and Lucifer and the Christ, and you know, and we may have that. We may be called to that, to have the little journey together, and you know,
I was listening. We were both actually listening this morning to a beautiful podcast that interview with a man speaking about Steiner's teachings and about the Kali Yuga and the different perceptions of this vast time shift that we're in, and how, according to Steiner's teachings, that we shifted out of the Kali Yuga like around 1898, I think you said.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different perceptions about whether we're still in it or not, and that's a whole nother podcast to talk about.
Yeah, I'm familiar. There's a lot of confusion about that.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the more we hold the context that we are in this great shift that's been referred to in prophecies, and that it is critical to make new choices, and that we come forth with a lot of courage, spiritual courage, as you spoke of earlier, and band together, as Makasha was talking about, to really allow, it's a deep level of trust within ourselves, to allow for new possibilities to emerge.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think the problem always points to the solution as well. You know, if somebody's overweight, then we have to say, okay, what are the factors that led to being overweight? And then I say, okay, there's your solution. If you're eating junk food, eat better food. If you've got emotional trauma that hasn't been healed, such as a sexual trauma, so you're unconsciously wrapping yourself in fat to be unattractive, so you don't have the likelihood of having to deal with another sexual trauma, then we have to heal the sexual trauma. In other words, the problem's always showing you the direction to get to the solution. So if you think of everything we've talked about, challenges with education, the solution is create a better education system. Challenges with money, then learn to value money in a new way, trade it in a new way, and make something valuable that holds its value that we have to uphold. You know, without a long list, you see the problem's always carrying the solution, just like yin always carries the seed of yang and yang carries the seed of yin. I think part of the healing is we have to sit still at a personal level, at a relationship level, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, as a family, as a business, and say, okay, what is it that we need? What is the challenges and what is it pointing us to, so we can actually be proactive instead of just repeatedly repeating the same behaviors and expecting a different result? You know, Einstein said, you can't expect a better result if you're using the same thinking that you are always using. I'm just paraphrasing his comment. I think the point I'm making is the challenge carries the solution in it, but you have to spend some time. You know, Jung called this holding the tension of the opposites. Wait and don't take a drug. Sit with yourself. If you're anxious or nervous or depressed, be really present with yourself and get clear on what it is that's driving this predicament or situation. He called it, the alchemists call it cooking. You've got to cook in it for a while, but people are so quick to medicate and drug themselves that they don't actually spend time with the challenge and learn from it. And I think we've all got to take a little time to slow down, because really a culture, as Arnold Mandel says, is a bunch of people doing the same thing. So most of us, if we look at our personal challenges, are actually looking at aspects of personal challenges that millions of people have. Millions of people are working too much to compensate for spending too much. Millions of people are suffering from being unconscious about the importance of clean food and healthy soils. Millions of people are suffering from media addiction. So if we, any one of us, does the honest work of looking into ourselves to see what it is that's really stopping me from living and loving fully, and then embraces that, then we activate that imaginal cell and we're changing it in the noosphere, the sphere of mind on this planet. We're feeding into the noosphere. So just like the 100th monkey all of a sudden starts washing potatoes all over the world because some monkey was doing it thousands of miles away, it enters the morphogenic field or the mind of the earth, and we start resonating together. And I think instead of waiting for some miracle president or savior to come get us or Jesus to return, we can be our own Christ. We can be our own creator. But the key point is realizing that whatever positive step you make yourself, you're automatically imprinting that into the global field. And there's research, for example, Rupert Sheldrake shows interesting research. I'll cite one of many of the research studies he did, but they did a study with high school and college students where they made up a new test that was quite hard to pass. And they found that each cycle of students that went through and took the examination, that kids taking the same test all over the world started getting better grades. And they did all sorts of factoring in to see how much of it was being shared. And they showed beyond a shadow of a doubt, the mathematics, the statistical analysis showed there's something happening at a global level of the noosphere, of the world mind, that every time one of us gets better at solving a problem, it imprints that wisdom into the field. So I think if people understand this concept, it really goes back to a line in a poem. Rumi said, "The greatest lover is the silent lover, and the greatest teacher is the silent teacher." What he means is, the greatest lover is the silent lover means you don't have to say anything because your love is radiating around you everywhere you go, and it's influencing everybody else just by being in your presence. And the greatest teacher is the silent teacher because everybody's watching. We're all watching each other. People are constantly watching each other. And so if we realize that we can be the imaginal cell, and instead of trying to save the world, if we just clean ourselves up a little bit, do our work a little bit on our healing and our diet and on our lifestyle, then we're actually imprinting that, activating our imaginal cells, and we're doing the best that we can do. And I think that if every one of us just did a little bit every day, we actually will start causing a ripple effect and moving us into the process of morphogenesis.
I think that's what's happening, Paul. that is...
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, thanks the Lord, because, the reality of, as Sheldrake says, is a phenomenon, the field phenomenon. What's a field phenomenon? And it has a quickening, of the yin and the yang, energetic field that has attraction towards resonance, and the resonant field then creates what's emergent, what's all happening through synchronicity, understanding how self-organizing systems really work, in a culture, and in that culture, like you're saying, we're building a new field for the metamorphic journey. And to trust that, there's no beginnings or no ends, or just now, forever, never, never. Go share that with your brothers and sisters. And I think that's what you're doing with your podcast, and really I'm thankful to be part of your family.
Well, me too. It's a blessing. I mean, when you and I first met, we spent probably an hour and a half chatting, and I just felt like I'd found a piece of my soul. It was just so amazing, and I was buzzing for days after that. I'm like, wow, it was such a pleasure to meet you. Then Catherine, when I got to meet you, I had the same experience. It's like, wow, there's such a mystery how the universe, here Jonathan Goldman says, you have to meet my friends. They're very in line with your teachings, and I want to make sure they listen to your Lucifer Christ Ahriman podcast because they're really into Steiner's teachings. And so, you know, here we are. It's just like if we let love do its work and get out of the way, then, you know, this is what happens, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful. The synchronicity and the self-organizing field that's actually
coordinating.
Yeah. Coordinating everything.
You can look at that through many different dimensions, like money being one of the ones, you know, that is influencing what's happening on the planet of crypto, you know, crypto money, this money. And it's like, I always call it, when I contract, I crucify Christ. When I open, I resurrect Christ.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
And looking at the mirror, well, what are you doing? Where are you making the decision from? But this gets into a deeper conversation because I'm also writing a book on nonlinear economics. And we've lived our lives in that way of living in. First time I had a nonlinear experience was
1974,
where a brother was meditating up in, a cousin actually up in Montana, came down to the festival and said there was a woman at his place and had rented his geodesic dome. And she had this dream that she was to bring $10,000 down to the organizers of this spiritual festival. And when he handed it to me, you know, I had an epiphany that there was another organizing field that was going on at that point. And we've lived our lives that were, somebody has a dream, and so I want to write a book on that. Okay. And also The Journey of the Fool, we're right in production for that now, is that whole art world, you know, of craziness from street kid hustler to high-class pimp, you know.
Yeah.
You know, being some
wise man.
I was the pinnacle of my family. I was successful, and I jumped out into the Joker and fooled them all.
That's great.
Came home with long hair. My family, oh man, I had to go through such a process to release from the projection, you know, that I should be a child of Christ, and I am in a higher sense, but you know, to activate that love field and the, you know, even hold all that in the right relation, you know. Mm. And I don't know how much longer I got on the planet. It looks like I'll be here another 10 years. My kids say, you can't leave until you get your shit together.
That's so good. Well, just because you're not in the body doesn't mean you're not able to do the work and inspire people. You know, I have too many experiences working with people on the other side. They tell me all sorts of interesting things. And my grandmother comes to visit me and tells me things. And I'll tell you a quick story. One time I was just falling asleep, and all of a sudden I felt somebody sit on the bed right on top of me. And I could feel the weight of the person. And I thought, my God, it scared the hell out of me because I sensed it wasn't Penny. And I kind of startled and it scared me. And I looked and there was nobody there. And I said to my soul, who's here? There's somebody here. I feel them. And my soul said, it's your grandmother. I'm like, oh my God. So I relaxed and turned on my clairvoyance. And sure enough, my grandmother had come to visit me. And she says, I come to see you all the time. I'm always around you. I'm always watching you.
Yeah.
So the point is, don't think that you have to go anywhere. You can hang out, but just be free of the burden of the biological vehicle.
Yeah. Rebirth.
Yeah.
I'll be coming and looking for you, buddy. Catherine, you get a hold of me and I'll go find him and hang out with him.
Sounds like a plan. That's great.
Well, this has been wonderful. Wonderful.
Hello, everybody. I sure hope you're enjoying this awesome podcast. I sure am. You know, if there's anything at all we've learned in the past 3 years, it's that not making an honest effort to be fit and healthy can have disastrous effects. It has always amazed me that there are countless thousands of diet books, online diet programs, countless books and online gurus offering get big, get fit quick programs, and biohackers offering solutions for everything from herpes to hemorrhoids. But we are the sickest and most unfit people to ever populate this planet. Clearly, something is wrong. The average American today spends $13,000 a year on medical expenses, and most countries are not much different for all the same reasons. Diets seldom work for any length of time because the human body is very dynamic, with ever-changing needs that require flexible individual approaches to meeting your individual needs. Our food and water supply is well known to be toxic, and most people don't realize that about 95% of the supplements sold are of low quality, are often oxidized from sitting in warehouses for long periods before reaching the customer, and are made from non-organic source products, often making your body more toxic, imbalanced, and stressed, which is no help at all. Exercise programs often don't get good results because people don't know how to determine what exercise their body needs to be balanced, and often over or under exercise. Additionally, eating if they are dieting and exercising but don't have the skills needed for effective mental-emotional self-management, chances are good that they will have a hard time listening to their bodies and sticking to the best programs. It doesn't have to be that way. That's exactly why I founded the Czech Institute for Holistic Health and Performance in 1995. We are still going strong, helping more people today than ever look great, feel great, and have the career that they've always dreamed of. There is nothing more rewarding than helping others to look good, feel good, and create their dreams. At 62 years of age, I'm still healthy, fit, and strong. I have multiple businesses, a farm, young children, and all the duties of a papa. Living holistically is the secret behind my tangible success. In my 40-year career in holistic health and high-performance exercise, orthopedic rehabilitation, holistic health, holistic diet and lifestyle coaching, I've traveled the world seeking out the top experts in every field related to holistic health and all aspects of rehabilitation and human performance. I was raised on a fully functional farm and have studied soil science and made a comprehensive study of why people have a hard time changing and how to help them achieve their dreams and create the life they truly want. My life's work is synthesized in the Czech Academy, which offers excellent, practical, effective training for everyone. If you want to master your own health and well-being, are a serious athlete seeking optimal long-term performance and longevity, or are an exercise or healthcare professional wanting to master holistic health as an approach to helping people heal efficiently and effectively, the Czech Academy has tried and tested training that will support your dreams. If you are ready to achieve mastery of your health and performance, become the best in your field as an exercise or healthcare professional, and learn to address the whole person with genuine, tried and tested holistic approaches, the Czech Academy is for you. If you are tired of the humdrum of your usual job and feel called to enter a career in holistic health, the Czech Academy offers everything you need. You can master the basics efficiently and begin making an income doing what you love to do. As your clientele builds and you progress in the Czech Academy, you can cut back on your old job and more fully engage a new, rewarding career in holistic health. Want a preview? You can check out the Czech Academy e-learning platform for a limited time with the open house we are currently offering. Academy enrollment ends this month and spaces are filling fast. We are limited to 100 spaces for this intake, so if you are genuinely interested, apply now. Go to chek.group/openhouse L4D. That's check.group/openhouse L4D. Think you'll really enjoy what we have to share with all of you. Yeah, well, my next question here is, since the beginning of COVID and with the World Economic Forum move toward creating smart cities around the world, it's become increasingly dangerous to live in big cities where there's no direct access to clean water and food that isn't controlled by big corporations and government influences. You've both got a lot of experience creating conscious communities that hold the values of being harmonious with nature and people being harmonious with each other. Can you share any suggestions for people that want to get out of cities and find and create their own conscious living communities in areas where they have access to resources such as clean drinking water and the ability to grow their own food? You know, for a lot of people, it's a very scary thing. They've never farmed. They've probably never even been close to the earth, but they have, I've had many of my young students in this situation saying, Paul, you know, what do? I'm scared. I feel something major coming and I have this urge to go out and be more close to nature. So having built so many conscious communities, what tips could you give for people that sense this need to get out more connected to nature and don't know how to create a community, but really feel that that's an important thing to do, which I really think it is?
Well, I would say just do it and dive in and then you learn it.
Go for it.
I mean, I've mentioned about the Co-Creator's Handbook, which is a great guide for those that are wanting to start community because it gives some real foundational principles that are so important. You know, we've worked with a lot of different communities throughout the world, actually, and some of the enthusiasm and ones that have started it, they haven't really gotten the relational dynamic field grounded. So that's so key, you know, ways to work together to resolve conflict. I've spoken about taking self-responsibility and not projecting and moving up the scale from being a victim to, like, you know, really owning whatever it is that's in the presence in the field, whatever we're contributing to be able to take responsibility for it in a good way.
Where do people find your Co-Creator's Handbook? Is that something people can buy, or how do they get access to it?
Well, yeah, they can get it from our livingcocreation.com website, livingcocreation.com.
Great. Is it a purchase item? Is it a book that they buy?
Book, yeah.
Great.
We don't have an ebook, but they can purchase the book.
Great.
It's supported a lot of communities, a lot of people that are doing just what you're saying, you know, heading out. And then, of course, all the other levels of learning of how to grow food and do all that. I think, you know, we've watched our son, who's here with us at Hummingbird. He's in his mid-40s, and he just dove in and I just started doing stuff, you know, 20, 25 years ago, and growing his own gardens and raising animals. And yeah, we learn as we grow, and it's a great experiment. And I think I think to follow that impulse and that guidance you were saying, you know, some of your young students feeling like, you know, we feel something coming and we want to get out of the cities. And I think that's a common experience. And I just encourage them to go for it.
Yeah. Well, I do. I really do. Our two of our assistants, my Kirsty, the girl that manages my social media, and Michael, who helped us run workshops and was our teacher to our kids, and both of them were teachers to our kids. But they really felt this urge, and they went to visit some friends in Toronto. And they happened through a series of connections to meet someone that owns a large organic farm. And the lady that owned it invited them to come live there and work on the farm. So they're, Kirsty's still managing my social media, but they immigrated to Canada and now they're living on a big farm and they're happy as clams, you know? So
yeah.
Using our imagination and opening our heart and asking Great Spirit for support, and then being aware of opportunities and looking for them, you know, go to, you know, farming websites or collectives that are already doing this. But, you know, I think wherever there's a will, there's a way. And I think our souls always guide us if we just hold still and get real clear on what we want. I think a lot of people's fear stops them from their listening process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way we've lived our life. Totally in that way. And I can't recommend it more highly in terms of how compelling it is and what a great adventure and feeling like we're on course. You know, this is like
Dharma.
Yeah. Following our destiny.
Yeah. Where we're going according to Steiner and Aurobindo and, you know, this change, we have to recognize that we're in the deep metamorphic journey, and we want to do it with those that we're guided to for co-creation, because you can't, you know, unless you can co-create, you know, you can't have a relationship that's going to be sustainable, because the bottom will fall out of it. But to be able to really know when the right relation comes in and what that means in terms of motive or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a real growth opportunity on many levels. My next topic of discussion, I think, is very, very important. It's about ritual and ceremony. As we've departed from nature in native ways, we've lost touch with both healthy rituals and important ceremonies that keep us grounded, bonded, and in a healthy relationship with our environment. Could you share your thoughts in this regard? And I'd also be interested to hear where you feel plant medicines such as mushrooms and ayahuasca tea ceremonies and related sacred medicines fit into healthy rituals.
Ceremony and rituals are core to our being and my particular passion, I'd say.
Great. Back
in the late 90s, started a program in Boulder with two other beautiful women called Path of the Ceremonial Arts for Women. And so I've been very immersed in that. And I think that, you know, creating simple rituals, like we talked about saying grace before a meal, you know, those kind of, or honoring today's the full moon and having just a moment out on the earth or honoring the cosmos and tuning in and being in tune with the cycles of nature, I think is so important. And while we're on this, I just want to weave in, we've done through the years many different potent events that have been global in terms of connecting people at sacred sites and being, you know, doing ceremonies that honor the earth, that honor each other, that allow us to deepen in our connection with all sentient beings. And there's a very strong movement toward the summer solstice, June 21st of this year, of people around the world to really anchor it, whether it's in their backyards or at special PowerPoints around the planet, to join together in prayer and to stand with the mother. So I just wanted to plant that seed in terms of collective ceremonies and studies that have been done of how even we were very involved in harmonic convergence back in 1987 and studies that came out of that of how that affected the collective morphogenetic field and the noosphere, as you're speaking of. So this is another very strong opportunity, and the indigenous elders from many tribes are really calling for people to gather at that time.
Are there any websites, Catherine, where people can find out about these types of large ceremonies going around the world that people can participate in?
We could send you some information on that. And, you know, it's a real emergent initiative.
Good. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll send you a couple places that people could go. I mean, there's no coordinating body for it right now, but it's more the recognition and the invitation of the importance of it. And we'll send you over Humanity Rising, Jim Garrison's beautiful work that he's done over the last 3-4 years of really addressing various topics, brought together a number of elders and spoke about the Kogi elders' prophecy and invitation that came out just in December. So yeah, we'll send that all to you. And just, I'll just complete and then let Makasha add in here, whatever is in relationship to tea ceremony. And our son and daughter-in-law who live in Australia are quite into doing tea ceremonies. They do it every day, sometimes twice a day. And we've participated with them and it's such a beautiful grounding ceremony that I think a lot of, especially young people are being drawn to. I mean, certainly culturally it's been done for centuries, but
are you talking about tea or ayahuasca, the psychedelic tea?
Well, I was talking about just tea ceremony, not
regular tea.
Yeah.
I was going to say tea, ayahuasca twice a day. That takes a pretty good set of kahunas.
That'd be a little much. And in relationship to mushrooms, I think that they're really, any of them can be really beneficial, but done in the right environment with the right guides. Because I think that also can be quite detrimental if done in a party ceremonies and opening the astral body. And
yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I did a very comprehensive podcast with a real shaman named Hamilton Souther, and we put together what's called Plant Medicine Essentials, and it's basically a 4+ hour user's guide. It was very popular. I think it was my 4th or 5th most listened to podcast in 2023. But we went into all the everything you need to know about how to do it right, how to do it, what happens if you do it wrong, what is doing it wrong, how do you select a good guide. And he has his own center, I believe, in Peru, and he has a school there, and he trains shaman, and he runs professional ceremonies. So I wanted to get him out in the open more so people knew there was a safe place to go and learn to do it professionally and get guided professionally. But I was curious because you both have experience with these things. So there's so many people doing it now. It's kind of in vogue, but you know, it, whenever things start becoming in vogue, the sacredness of them disappears. And that's what concerns me.
Yeah, I think you're right on. I know that I've had journeys, you know, over the years that were spontaneous and where somebody was guided and like in the big hotel and hands me this, that was induced a medicine. I didn't know what it was other than I was guided to do it in Valley of Fire. And then that opened up a whole another place in my psyche that there was something else going on here. All it was so interesting because all of my stuff, when I was going through the rebirth experience, my alcohol consumptions and everything just dropped. And I was like in this journey and haven't turned around. Been in it for all these years, met my honey after so many years, and still here, you know, like Ram Dass says, I'm still here, you know.
Yeah, well, that might have been an angel that handed you that envelope.
I think so.
I think so, you know. I never heard from him again or anything, but I don't know what medicine it was, but boy, it kicked my booty. And
he's very trusting.
All of a yeah, sudden, he sure is.
Hitchhiking with three kids and a pregnant woman up from Santa Cruz to Colorado, and you know, because there was a return of the white buffalo, and I was born in Montana, and anyway, we hitchhiked there, caught a train from Montana to Colorado and over the mountains here into the place. 10,000 people gathered at that particular time, so it was really a convergence of souls coming together.
Well, that's great. You know, you've lived a full life, so you know, it's if a person passes on without having lived, it's probably a scary experience, but you've certainly added a lot to the collective of the world, so you know, you should be proud of yourself. Because, you know, I tell people all the time, the only thing you can take with you when you die is what you've become. Money doesn't go, belongings doesn't go, ego doesn't even go. It's the wisdom that you've created. And so when you leave Makasha, you're going to just be a huge star full of wisdom shining on all of us.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. That's so right. Yeah, beautiful image.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm going to go stand outside and look up in the sky and say, ah, you're here, baby. I love you.
Well, I'll tell you another, we're right in the middle of something you might be interested in. During the harmonic conversions, one of the things that we were working with was sacred sites and those gatherings at that time. And we brought a film crew into Machu Picchu, guided by a brother that I was in the crater in Maui. And with a ceremony we were doing there, and the shaman tuned in, and he ended up, we ended up going to
Machu Picchu.
Machu Picchu was a vision of using the Kabbalah as a symbol to bring together 12 representatives from around the world to the Tree of Life, using the Kabbalah as the vehicle for uniting our mother and father creator. And so it got hijacked.
Oh.
And we never got it out.
The film.
And we got the film. Now where it's resurrected, and we're feeling that we might want to, because of the generational gap of what's happening now based on that event. So we're looking at re-editing it. Anyway, that's right on our plates now. It just synchronistically came back in the actual film. And I was on top of Huayna Picchu when the vision came, and with the shamans, and we had gone up to Machu Picchu to the top, take the objects from the offerings up to the top of Huayna Picchu, which is the pole of the feminine. And when we went up, I was holding the flag, the rainbow flag, the Andean rainbow flag went back. It was to go back to the location and fly it prior to the harmonic convergence. So anyway, that resurfaced again, and we are looking to get it out there.
I think that'd be fantastic, especially for younger people. I think it would really inspire them.
That's what we have found.
It feels so relevant now with the event coming in for the June summer solstice, and just the sense of the importance of us really gathering together and the influence it can have in these global initiatives.
That's a great idea. I encourage you to follow through with that. You know, as we close out here, you two are definitely wise elders. I mean, you've lived a lot of life. You've learned a lot. You've grown a lot. You've shared a lot. If you could leave a message for the people of the world right now, pretending that everybody in the world could hear this, what would you say? Or what would you like to say?
Well, what comes to me is to open your hearts to greater love and to really tune inward, to do the deep healing work that we've been talking about, to be willing to surrender and let go of positionality and judgments that create right and wrong and separation, and to really open to greater kindness and love, and see how we can unify to together deal with all the challenges that the world is facing.
Yeah, thank you.
And I would say that keep resting in the holy moment of the now.
And that's beautiful.
Feels phenomenal to rest in great natural peace, this exhausted mind. And that is from Rinpoche, one of the rest in great natural peace, this exhausted mind, driven helplessly by karma and negative thoughts in a great turbulent ocean of samsara. Just rest.
Wow.
Just go. Let go. So it's one of my strong mantras I'll close with.
Yeah, I love it. Fantastic. It makes me feel very blissful just hearing it. Could you guys share any websites or resources or anything you'd like to direct people to so they can find more information, you, whatever you want people to have access to?
Well, we're relaunching our Patreon site, which is patreon.com/Roski would be where they would find us there.
That's R-O-S-K-E?
Correct. And we'll be particularly focusing on the unfoldment of the journey of the fool. So for those engaged in that, and it's a real interactive process and self-reflections, and then also hearing some of the stories and teachings and, I mean, the learnings, what we've learned through the journey that we've been on. So that would be one. And livingcocreation.com is another website. And then hummingbirdtlc.org is our hummingbird community website.
Excellent. I looked at a couple of your websites. I loved them. You know, some just beautiful stuff and scenery. And just, I felt like I really just had a great time being on the website. So thank you for sharing those things. Well, thank you to both of you. I feel grateful for Jonathan connecting us, because we really have a lack of wise elders in the world, as you know. And it's great to know that there's people like you, and that you're out there, and that you know that you can share this wisdom and your life experience and inspire us all. And I'm just really grateful to be able to have spent this couple of hours with you guys. And I think all of us that listened got a chance to really feel your love, your presence, your courage, and all the changes you've gone through, the lessons you've gone through, and to help leave us all realizing that we can get through things, and that we can grow, we can learn, and that angels show up with envelopes, and your soulmate shows up in the places when you least expect it, and that spirit will guide you, you know, and all we got to do is just listen and be brave enough to follow it, you know?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Paul.
Yep. Yeah, I want to just also appreciate you and what you've developed over the years out of your, you know, out of the womb of the mother and into the heart of the soul of the earth. And it's wisdom teaching, you know, the mysteries are so apparent, they're coming into being now. So I want to, you know, pranam to you to have the heart to bring this teaching out, you know, to the world. Let's get it out there. Whatever we can do, you know, for to helping to stabilize this next turn of the spiral will be such a gift for all of us to love each other. And also invite you to come out to Hummingbird and hang out. We talk story. And
yeah. As soon as I get Spirit Gym out there, I'll have time for some of those things. So I'll definitely keep that on my list of to-do items. So thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you
to my sponsors for all your love and support and making the podcast possible. Thank you to each of you that buy anything from the sponsors. I only work with sponsors that actually meet my very strict values, who are earth conscious and sustainable practices, and make products that actually do what they say they will, which is rare. And so thank you for listening. And I hope all of you feel inspired today to activate your imaginal cells.
Absolutely.
And spread your wings. No matter what, we can be the butterfly, but we can be the phoenix and rise from the ashes.
Absolutely.
And I say, hey, the phoenix and the butterfly both have wings and a heart. So we've all got wings and a heart. Let's do it together.
Do it together.
So, and the condor and the eagle come together, there will be peace.
Yes, let's do it. And,
great.
We'll take some butterfly magic along with it. So lots of love to all of you. Let's keep working on this together. And thank you guys. I'm excited people can find your websites and the book you mentioned. I look forward to sharing a beautiful podcast with you guys next Tuesday. Can't wait. See you then. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Living 4D with Paul Check and today's guests, Makasha and Catherine Roski. You can visit the website of the Earth Guardians at www.earthguardians.org, the Hummingbird Transformational Living Center at hummingbirdtlc.org, and Living Co-Creation at livingcocreation.com. You can support Makasha and Catherine and their work through their Patreon site at patreon.com/Roskies. That's patreon.com/ROSKES. Catch up with Paul on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at paul.check, on X at paulcheck, or on his YouTube podcast channel, youtube.com/living4D with Paul Check. Watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com and visit the Check Institute site at checkinstitute.com to find Paul's e-learning courses, advanced training programs, and to learn more about the Check Academy. You can read the show notes and find links to the resources mentioned in this episode at checkinstitute.com/podcast. This podcast would not be possible without the support of our premier sponsors, Bioptimizers, Organifi, and Paleo Valley. Please show your appreciation by taking advantage of their special discounts for our listeners. The links are in the show notes. And finally, if you enjoyed today's episode, consider leaving us a 5-star rating and a warm review on the podcast platform of your choice. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, and YouTube.